You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. We hope you guys had a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. We hope that you guys were able to spend some time with your family, friends, and loved ones. And we're excited to be back with another awesome episode. This week's episode is going to be part two with Spartan Forge. If you missed part one, go to our previous episode, catch up on that one. It'll help this episode make a lot more sense. And without further ado, let's get into it. And first, here's a quick word from one of our sponsors. We've all heard the saying, a picture tells a thousand words. And the same can be said for deer mounts. A skull on the wall represents so much more than just a successful hunt. It represents the culmination of lots of work, some luck, and rich memories with friends and family. At Just One, we like to hang our skulls with skull hangers from Kibosh Outdoors. The hangers are secure, super easy to set up, and made in the U.S. They even have hangers for as little as $9 to get your skull sitting proudly at the perfect angle. Go check them out at KiboshOutdoors.com or follow the link in our bios and use code JUSTONE at checkout to save 10% on your order.
So that correlation that, you know, are you the one that's looking at the data and saying, okay, in Pennsylvania, we're looking for this. Is that the researcher? What does that kind of look like?
I was the guy who did that, but as the, for probably the first 4 years, it was the Bill Thompson show. And I did all of that work, but then as we hire people and as we grow, I brought on two other guys. One of them is a much better data scientist than I am. I'm only good enough to be dangerous. He's good enough to, you know, start a revolution. So I can speak his language. I understand what he's talking about. I can present useful critiques on his work. But he's been doing the majority of it now for about 3 or 4 years. And it's mostly his full-time job. What? And I check his work and you know, we go back and forth like that. But I've, in the past 3 years, 2 years, especially last 2 years, have moved into much more of a CEO role where I'm supervising all of these things take place. And I'm not doing it as much anymore. I still interact with the data, though. I still, for my own purposes, and just because I'm an inquisitive person, when we get new GPS data, I still look at it. I'll still go right to the data. I'll isolate all of the mature does and bucks, and I'll just watch them with my coffee. And, you know, how have they been acting and what have they been doing and what's interesting about it, just for my own purposes. And then, you know, relate my observations either through podcasts like this or use them to educate myself on the variance and what, you know, causes deer movement. And then allow that to inform the research staff, the writing staff, pro or ambassadors, to kind of elucidate what we're trying to do here, which is ultimately save people time. Mm-hmm. So I've really stepped into that like CEO role where, you know, I, as far as the company's concerned, I haven't written a useful piece of code in a few years, 2 years. But, you know, I'll still go back and look. We go through and ensure that there's things like unit testing taking place and that the code quality is there. But as far as the day-to-day rigmarole of writing code anymore, that's not something I participate in. I supervise it more now than anything.
Dang. My mind is blown over here, kind of. But two questions. How long did it take you to kind of create this, to me, monster of a machine? That, and then also, by looking at all this data and stuff, personally, has it made you a better hunter just because you're in it all the time? Are you looking at deer differently when you're in the woods or doing stuff like that?
So as far as like quality of hunter, so that's a good question, first off. Secondly, I would say that it's made me a more understanding hunter.
Okay.
Versus quality. What does quality mean even? So the quality of a deer hunter really comes down to how quickly can you learn from your own mistakes and how much time are you willing to put into it? That's really what makes, when I examine people who kill consistently, harvest deer, and trophy caliber or deer. And the reason why trophy caliber is even useful is because by definition, those are deer that are trying to evade being caught or killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bigger and older it is, the smarter it is, and the more trophy it is. So when it comes to people, and so I'm using that to define what is a good hunter, because that's not necessarily how some people might not think of as what a good hunter is. And it's not even how I do, but I'll use that rubric for the purposes of this discussion in saying that, when I don't get discouraged whenever I go hunt and I don't see deer anymore.
Yeah.
When I was maybe younger hunter, like I killed way more deer back in the day than I do now, especially trophy caliber deer. I mean, I've had good seasons. For 2 years, I didn't kill anything. This year I killed one 10-year-old deer and one 8-year-old deer, that were both trophies to me.
How old was the, I think big six, right?
I had a big six. He was aged at 8 years.
Okay.
In Virginia. And then I killed a deer that was either 10 and a half or 11 and a half years old that was killed in Pennsylvania. Leading up to killing that big six, I didn't see a deer for like almost 3 weeks of hunting.
Wow.
But I knew I was hunting the right spots. I knew I was doing the right stuff based on my experience of hunting those types of deer. Because I had many opportunities to kill like good 3-4-year-old bucks, and I could have ended the season. And I don't, it's not that I don't want to, I will. It's just, I knew this really old buck was in this area, and that was what I was going after. And mm-hmm. now that I've kind of looked at the truth data surrounding these really mature deer and how elusive they are, how smart they are, like just, again, it's to kind of contextualize this, I've seen collared deer studies where mature deer will just avoid cameras and avoid bait mm-hmm. piles. So like you might think you're doing things wrong, but you really just have no idea how smart this deer is, or how much it knows about you as a hunter, and how it may be patterning you just as much as you're trying to pattern it. And it makes, for me, I get less discouraged by the cat and mouse than I find other people that are maybe in the same phase of their hunting career as I am. I kind of mm-hmm. put myself in a phase where I really enjoy teaching people about hunting and watching them become successful as much or more than I do with myself. And I know a lot of guys who are at this kind of same point as me who get really discouraged when they're not getting their hands on the antlers that they expected to, or because they've been done in the past. Knowing what I know about deer now, that doesn't upset me. It rolls right off my back, and I consider myself lucky anytime. Truly lucky, like truly. People say, oh, I consider myself lucky to be a deer hunter, and then will complain on social media that they're not killing. And it's like, if you truly considered yourself lucky, none of this would bother you, because you all know it's a blessing anytime you get to do any of this stuff. So hunting, having this knowledge, and God, I'm sorry, guys, everything is a long answer with me. Having this knowledge has made me a more patient hunter. I don't know if it's made me a better hunter necessarily, but I think being a patient hunter that doesn't get upset about not harvesting allows you to keep grinding, and then you will eventually harvest.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things that we've talked a lot about recently on here is hunting. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do to get yourself in the right position, but ultimately it ends up being a numbers game, and you put in time and you put in sits, and you have weeks where you don't see stuff, but you keep grinding it out. And then, you know, you do enough of the numbers, enough of the sits, and then it comes together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. If I had to take two hunters and you wanted me to place a bet on who was going to kill, and I had a guy who had 80% of the knowledge, but only did 20% of the work, but a guy who had 20% of the knowledge and did 80% of the work, the latter is killing every time.
Oh yeah. I would 100%
agree. That guy who's willing to outwork the other guy and maybe doesn't know it all. Like if somebody said to me, Bill, how do I kill a good deer this year? And by good deer, let's just say a 3.5-year-old buck. How do I do that? Like, what do I have to do this year? I would say, go find a large tract of woods, go isolate every place that's difficult to get to, and then further isolate every leeward piece of topography in that area. And then in a mapping application, note every scrape that you see on that air place that has an overhead licking branch, and then hang a camera over it. And then pick the deer that you want to, and then be willing to sit for 2 weeks over one of those big scrapes leading up to, during, and for about 5 or 6 days after the rut, and you will kill something. Yeah. Or at least you'll have a really good opportunity to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's rung true for us. I mean, we haven't necessarily killed those giant ones, but like one of the bucks that I killed this year during rifle was kind of just one of those where you put in the work, you hunt the right spot, and it finally comes together. You know, you go in with the right wind and things like that, and it makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's variance there, like agricultural areas versus mountain buck areas versus swamp areas. There are things that you can prioritize one over the other, access being one of them. You can get lazier with access in Pennsylvania than you can in farm country. You can blow up areas and hunt the same areas in Pennsylvania, mountain country. You can walk into the same exact stand, sit it every day, even with bad winds, and you can overhunt the crap out of an area, and you'll still get a chance as long as you're willing to sit, you know, the 10 days or 14 days. Whereas in agricultural country, you can definitely blow areas out where you overhunt them too much, and now you're scent's everywhere, and you're not going to see the deer. Versus what would you call it? Swamp country, where you can get a lot done digitally before you ever step foot on the ground. So there are, of course, variances in these different areas. But if you just follow the rubric that I described, if 100 guys follow the rubric that I just described to you, and no matter what, didn't get upset, kept treating every hunt like this is the hunt where they could kill, and disciplined themselves and got up early and got in the stand and stayed quiet, and stayed off their phone and looked around and paid attention and sat those scrapes that we just talked about, and had a modicum of thought brought into the wind that they're hunting. Out of 100 guys, if they did that across the U.S., like 60 of those guys are going to kill. Mm-hmm. 80 or 90% of those guys are going to see mature deer, period. I mean, that is as good as empirical data can get, you know, based on an anecdotal, hypothetical description of things. So, yeah, I mean, that's hunting. It's the grind.
Yep. True. So we obviously want to be respectful of your time, but I do want to talk a little bit about your hunting background. I saw, was this the first year, maybe it was last year, you went elk hunting?
Yeah, this first one, this first year is my first year elk hunting, yep.
So I haven't been. Austin has been this year, and I've heard enough about it.
I'm sorry, I lied. I did some cow elk hunting when I was younger with family or with friends. And some rifle stuff. But yes, this is my first real, this is really my first year doing real elk hunting. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So I haven't been before, but Austin went this year, and, I was just curious what your take on it was. What was the experience like? I appreciated your, I guess, experience and just the way that you handled things on it. I don't know if Austin has even seen the video of it or not.
I don't think I have yet.
So I was just curious, because I'm someone who's wanting to go in the future. What was your experience? What were the takeaways for you?
Elk hunting is even more, if you're willing to work, you will be successful. Like that is bottom line. If you're willing to bust your hump, you will see elk. Whereas, you know, I just said those numbers before, 30 to 40% of people will not see a mature whitetail or a whitetail, even under that rubric I described before. I would say 95% of people, I don't know this to be true because I've only done one elk hunt. It was for 12 days. So let's just, speaking on my limited experience for that time, if you are willing to take 10 to 14 days, and like I was hunting with Drew from Seek One. So I think you said you saw the video. Austin, you didn't see the video.
I haven't. I'm going to go watch it.
We were doing like 30,000, 35,000 steps a day. Drew is a psycho. Like what Drew does better than anyone, and it's one of the things I love about him, is he will outwork everyone, and he won't complain about it for a second. He will just put his nose to the grindstone and go as hard as he can for as long as he can. I know few people, everyone talks like they can do that, but when you actually get in the room or on the hunt with someone who's actually doing that, it's a separate experience, and most people can't tolerate it. Mm-hmm. Most people can't hang with it. A lot of people would hear me say that and say, like, that sounds awesome, or I want to do that. And it's like, I love it. I appreciate it. But it even got to the point for me where I was like, this guy is just, his work ethic is out of this world. If you are willing to commit to yourself and have that kind of work ethic and say, I'm going to make the necessary sacrifices, you will see and have a chance at elk. So mm-hmm. my takeaway is get in better shape than you think you need to be in, especially if you're doing public. If you're doing a guided hunt, it doesn't matter, right? They're going to walk you up. Somebody's been following the elk for a week. They're going to walk you into the elk. You're going to get your shot. But if you're on public land and you're willing to work, you also, you know, and I'm not putting down people who pay for guided hunts. I hope to be a guy one day who can pay for a guided hunt and go do that with my son or something. I'm not against that. All I'm saying is it's actually an exchange. It's, are you willing to take the vacation off from work that you're losing $1,000 or $2,000 on? Or are you willing to pay $2,000 and be out there for 3 days and kill? Like it's, mm-hmm. it's one or the other, right? So people get all high and mighty about guiding themselves, or I'm sorry, about doing public land hunting and how it's the superior way of hunting. I do think it's a better way to learn hunting, but you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's like you're either spending resources in one area by taking vacation or time away from family or time off from work to get the same experience as you would if you paid money to be guided. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sorry to sound simplistic about it, but it's kind of the truth. So my experience with elk hunting was, well, first off, I'm thankful, and I still haven't done it. I didn't read any of the comments on that video because Austin didn't see it, but I was at full draw. I had the elk walking. We called, the elk stopped. And right as I was just looking at him, and then right as I acquired and got where I was aiming, he took a step and it moved the arrow from being, you know, if you watch the video, and Austin, when you watch it, if you mm-hmm. look at the critical area on the elk and then there's a rock right below him, if you look at the critical area on the elk and then right as he steps, I take the shot. If you monitor where that rock is on the ground, you'll see that his whole hind end moves right over that rock. And I ended up hitting him on hind end. Now, what they didn't say in the video was that elk ended up getting killed by a separate hunter that was hunting an alfalfa field below us like 5 days later. So that elk ended up getting harvested.
Good. Cool.
But, and it was fine. It was chasing a cow in a field. So right. I had hit him right in the hind quarters. But, you know, I learned from the experience. I felt awful. I prepared as much as I could for the experience. You know, Drew had told me beforehand, and a lot of other, you know, pretty famous elk hunters and people that I talked to before I went and did it said, no one kills on their first trip, or no one should kill on their first trip. Like, you really should get your teeth kicked in. Mm-hmm. And I had a really good chance and a really good elk. I don't know. I would guess that he was 280 inches, 290 inches.
Wow.
And I don't know that to be sure. Maybe he was 250. Yeah. I don't know. You can tell me, Austin, when you go and watch the video, what you thought he was.
I went for the first time this year, and I don't know what mine. I actually did harvest one.
Awesome.
I got we went to a shop. I won't say where we went, but we went to a shop, and a guy who owned the shop talked to us, and we'd been out there, you know, how you were saying, putting in the work. We were walking 10-plus miles a day. We'd been out there for 5 days, and we told him that, and he goes, go to this place. And the next day was opening day. We hadn't seen an elk. And we went, and where he told us to go, I shot one 300 yards or 300 yards away from the pin he put on our map, opening day. But it's kind of, I don't know how big mine was. It was a 5x5, and I'm happy with it. I don't know if I'll be able to tell you the inches on it.
No, you should be happy with it. I mean, like I said, what I learned was it's really about the work and the preparation. And, but for me, and I didn't talk to the guy who filmed us. He's a good friend of mine, actually, or I consider him a good friend. His name's Thomas. The day that we had been getting our teeth kicked in for like the first week, I want to say first week or 8 days, we had like two opportunities. We couldn't close the gap. We had been hunting really hard, and then we actually, for the first day, kind of broke protocol on like the first Sunday right before Drew's birthday and decided to leave the woods and go get lunch. So we left and drove to a town, which we had been eating out of, like, you know, DIY, back of the truck stuff every one of those days. And finally, we were all kind of burnt out and we were like, let's just go get a cheeseburger in town. So we went to town, we got a cheeseburger. And then we went and we're like, well, instead of hunting tonight, cause it's already kind of late, let's just go glass these areas that we have been at to kind of get an idea where the elk might be in the morning. So we were glassing these areas, and one of them from the road, we saw a ton of elk, like 150 elk or 200 elk or something like that. And we were like, well, we're making a move on this, like, right now. So we went to the other side of the hill. We went down and we started to do a stalk. And during the stalk, and I told my wife this the night we were watching the video, because, again, like, I don't know, maybe it didn't show up in the film right, or maybe there's edited for time or something. But it started to thunderstorm in the distance, and we were getting just little spots of drizzling rain when we started the stalk. I almost got it done on the initial stalk. We got within about 70 yards, 80 yards, and I just wasn't willing to make the shot. I think some guys probably would have tried that shot. My thing was, like, I wanted to be 50 or in. So we ended up getting all going almost like a mile to a mile and a half around and then stalking up. And while that was happening, it started to rain on us while it was sunny out. And then, like, rainbows, two double rainbows, like, came up. And right as those rainbows came up, we got down on the ground and we had elk, some raghorns and some smaller elk right on, like, within 10 feet of us, 15 feet of us. And we're just laying on the ground as they're, like, going, as they're moving over us. And we had some that were, you know, I could have smacked one on the hind end at one point. And then we had some cows that were right on top of us. And then we were waiting for them to move off because there were these bulls that were obviously around these hot cows. And then they moved off. And then it started to hail. And there were just all of these, gosh, like, environmental things happening around us. And all in my head, all I was thinking was, it's happening today. Like, it's going to happen. And I very rarely get that feeling where something doesn't happen. And I guess something did happen. I had a shot and I blew it. But to me, it became either one of the lowest points of my hunting career or one of the highest points of my hunting career. And it was one or the other. And it ended up being, you know, one of the lowest moments. And I, like I said, I don't read comments on YouTube videos or any of that stuff, but I'm told that there are a lot on there where people like, he wasn't ready for that hunt or something, or he shouldn't have taken a shot or something. And, you know, or that I should have burned my tag, because we kept hunting after that. We looked for 2 days for that bull, even though didn't think it was a fatal shot. We looked for 2 days. And then after 2 days, we were like, this guy's not dead. This is not a dead animal. Because we looked freaking everywhere, and we worked just as hard for those 2 days as we did scouting to go and hunt. So then on the last day, we had another shot at a really good bull that you really can't see in the video. That was probably even bigger. I would have guessed he was probably 330 or 340, and he was bedded on the ground, and we got within like 40 yards of him, and I couldn't get him to stand up, or he wouldn't stand up. And when we were in the video, like, waiting for this to happen, Thomas, the camera guy, said to me, I just felt the wind on my neck. And not like the wind was in our face. And then he goes, I just felt wind on my neck. And within 30 seconds, every cow in that area blew out and took every bull with them. And then even after that, same night, we got an opportunity on two others. So, We worked our butts off. It was a great time. We're planning to do it again next year. I definitely got an itch from it that I need to itch. Whitetail to me. Like, even when I took those shots, I didn't get the kind of adrenaline drop or the dump that I get from mature whitetails. It's a different type of hunt. It's a lot more interactive. I would say the low points are a lot better than the low points of whitetail. Like, when you're not successful elk hunting, you're still in the mountains of Montana.
Yep.
Successful elk hunting. You're not, you know, in a swamp covered in mosquitoes in Southern Maryland. you know?
And you're seeing all sorts of stuff too. Like we saw bear, moose, I mean, mule deer, like you're seeing everything instead of maybe a squirrel.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for all of those reasons, we're definitely going to do it again. We are going to be building more Western-centric features into the application more than we have already. I actually came up with some really good ideas for stuff that I had done work on while I was in the military, helping out people on like long-range reconnaissance, and that I'm going to be incorporating into the app. So it was highly productive for me, and it was an amazing time that I look positively on. But yeah, the day or two right after that was pretty rough for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, I appreciated your perspective on it, and I'm sure you've heard that a lot, but I mean, that's part of hunting and there's a raw emotion to it too.
I'm not troubleshooting you. I just would like to understand kind of what you saw, or what was your takeaway on what my perspective was at the end of that? I'm not asking you because any other reason than to see, I've not talked to anybody who's watched the video. I've never talked to anybody besides my wife. I've not talked to anybody who watched it. So what was your sense?
Well, you know, when it happened, I was like, man, that sucks. And then, like you mentioned, being someone who's watching it and seeing that you were putting in the work to track it, even though you didn't feel like it was dead, you didn't feel confident it was dead, that was a reassuring feeling as another hunter, being like, okay, he's putting in work to try and find this animal. He is clearly genuinely upset about what happened and disappointed. And I've seen that with Austin. I've experienced that myself. So being someone who has missed a deer or shot one and you don't recover it, you don't find it, you can kind of empathize with another person. And sort of at the end of the video, I felt like you hadn't necessarily come to peace with it, but you were looking more on the bright side, I'll say. You know, you were being genuine, you were being raw about it, but you were also like, man, this was a great experience. I learned a lot. I'm going to be back to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, Drew is one of my best friends. And even if we stopped hunting or he stopped hunting, I still text him and we still call each other. In fact, I just spoke with him earlier today. He officiated my wedding. So, he's one of my best friends. I think he'll always be one of my best friends. And anytime I get the opportunity to just get lost with him in the mountains and pick his brain and talk to him about life, and he just had a new baby. And you get that kind of one-on-one time with another guy, friends that you know, care about. And then Thomas, the photographer, the filmer, is a great guy that I also love being around. And then you get dropped. So you're getting dropped in a situation with two other people that you genuinely enjoy. And then you get to go and chase elk, and you are furthering your professional goals as the architect of an application that helps hunters in that sense as well. And you're getting the opportunity to put food on the table, and you're exploring places that, you know, few people go to, and enjoying something that few people get to do. And like all of the pluses of this, there are too many, it's too much. And so for me, it's as good as stuff gets to me.
Yeah. And honestly, the video was refreshing because I know you're not insulated to it, but social media and YouTube romanticizes hunting in a way where you look at the thumbnail and man, it's this giant buck and you see the success, but it's rare anymore to see some of the realities of hunting, whether that's, you know, just missing or whether it's a shot that's not great and you don't recover the animal. Those are real parts of hunting, unfortunately. And, you know, we've talked a lot about on our podcast without the lows, I mean, the highs wouldn't be the highs that they are. You like, there's got to be some variance between those two to make it as rewarding as it is.
Yeah. And we all make mistakes. And if you're not willing to put that out there, there was never a discussion whether or not we were going to show me mucking that whole thing up. But I do know from dealing with other people in the industry that there are hunters out there that will not put that type of content out no matter what.
Right.
And some of them have decent reasons for it. And some of them have really crappy reasons for it. It's the truth. And trying to conceal something like that for the reasons that you just talked about is wrong. But then also it's going to come out. It's going to see the light of day. You know, one of the things that really, I actually talked about it with Drew and Thomas while we were in Montana, is that one of the great things about, or, you know, one of the things that helps me, how can I put this? There's only a few channels in which you can communicate directly with the Almighty. And one of them is by, if you do the right thing constantly, no matter what, you'll be rewarded in one way, shape, or form. It might not be the way that you want to be rewarded, but you will be rewarded. In other words, you know, if you make the right choices and the right sacrifices in life, it will ultimately be for your betterment. But then the second part, the flip side to that coin is, if you lie and dissemble and try to conceal things, it will see the light of day.
Yep.
And people mm-hmm. might not think of that as an active way of how they communicate with the Almighty, but it is the Almighty communicating with you. In other words, if you do the right thing, we're going to be good. And if you don't, you're going to have problems. And it will. There's no reason, if there's no God, that that should be the case, by the way. If people who are like, you know, I don't believe in God or whatever, it's like, well, that's odd, because it seems to me like people who do the right thing no matter what do well. And people will be like, well, what about, you know, the apostles were all crucified. And it's like, and we're talking about them positively 2000 years later. And in the final analysis, they're better for it. So there you go. So that's kind of my sense of it. And that's why I try to do things the way that I do, not because I'm better than anyone else, but because I'm truly and deathly afraid of the retribution if I don't act correctly. So for us, it was a non-starter that we were going to present this hunt in the way that it was, right, wrong, mm-hmm. right, or indifferent. And that's the way that Drew always does business, and that we will at Spartan Forge do business.
Buzzard Roost saddles made right here in the great state of Louisiana should be on every Louisiana bow hunter's list as a must-have in their hunting arsenal. Buzzard Roost Saddles achieves comfort through adjustability for those long day sets during the rut, and also provides the maneuverability to get up and move when you see the need. Buzzard Roost Saddles was created with the need to lighten the piro as well as the backpack to go deeper than everyone else. Louisiana bow hunters are a mixed bag, and Buzzard Roost Saddles is the tool to fit any job. Whether it's public land, private land, hardwoods, pines, or even the bottomless swamps, Buzzard Roost Saddles has what you need to stay mobile.
Yeah, and I think I have a lot of respect for that. I think that's why I've found myself watching more like Seek One videos, because like they're not afraid to show the ugly side of hunting, if you will. Like we may not talk about a ton, but there is that side of, man, I gut shot that deer. There's a buck hanging above the computer right now that I gut shot, and I'm not someone who's ever dealt with depression or anything like that, but I did the same thing you did. Drew back, deer took a step as I released, and just complete gut shot. And I felt sick. Like I didn't even try to find him that night. I called a dog the next morning and was like, we're going to do everything we can to find this deer. Luckily he expired just up a hill. But it was, I was depressed that night. And, you know, had we been really recording and producing kind of our YouTube channel, we would have shown that, because like one of our big things is we want to get people outside. You know, we want to get new hunters hunting and things like that. And I feel like that shows, like I took a buddy yesterday and he missed a deer, and he was upset about it. I'm like, dude, it happens. And I went around, we had our whole group there. And I said, I missed this year, or I missed the first shot at the elk. I missed it. And then I went to another guy and he missed shots, and just, you know, it's like,
yeah.
We all, no matter how experienced we are, have those situations where it just doesn't flow together the right way. And it ends that way. So I'm looking forward to watching the video. I have a lot of respect for, you and for Drew and Thomas for showing that. I mean, cause it's very easy to just go, we won't show that and move on. But there's a reality to it where, look, this happened. Yeah, we may be Seek One, but we still make mistakes. We're hunters, we're human, and I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, so precisely.
So we've obviously gone over on time, which wasn't super surprising. I kind of want to wrap up quickly here and obviously be respectful of your time. I hear kiddo in the background. So
sorry about that.
No, you're fine. Want to give you a chance here at the end to give a last plug for Spartan Forge. And then also we kind of do a segment around our campfire and we've sort of segued into this pretty well at the end. Like Austin mentioned, we're really trying to get people new into hunting. So we kind of do an around our campfire and we paint the picture. If we were around our campfire telling stories, giving advice, what's a piece of advice that you would give someone who's new wanting to get into hunting?
Make sure that you want to hunt for the right reasons and that you don't want to hunt because you like the image of what hunters are. I think a lot of people get into it and they like the image or the culture that surrounds it. And then they get into it for the wrong reasons. That either leads to them under preparing or not making the necessary sacrifices to be successful. And we talked about it a little bit, like hold your head high when you make mistakes, as long as you did everything you could to try to be successful. Like if you go to a hunt knowing that you didn't shoot your bow as much as you should have, or that it wasn't sighted in as well as it could have been, then that's on you to take accountability of yourself and to fix that. But if you've done everything you can to prepare, then do not get upset when things fall apart because you're shooting a stick at a moving animal and things are going to fall apart. But I think the only way for someone to do that consistently is if they are hunting for the right reasons. So What I would say is do some self-examination, make sure that you actually want to work your butt off and do these things. Like I'm going to get up probably the 12th of December. I'm going to have one opportunity to hunt. My wife is a executive in the FBI and she's got a lot of time where she's gone a lot. And I've got one morning tomorrow morning where I'm going to have to wake up at like 4 o'clock and drive a couple of hours to go do a 1 or 2 hour sit. That might be all I have for a while. And you're not going to have the motivation to do that or to prepare or to do the right thing by the animal, no matter what, like not take a shot because you are, some people will take shots they shouldn't because they are more concerned with the chance that they might get to kill and they're less concerned with the result of a bad shot for the animal and that they're just not going to talk about it if they do it. And I'm not casting judgment on people. All I'm saying is truly examine and understand that you want to be a part of this pastime and that the reasons that you want to be a part of the pastime are sound and that it's going to put you in a place where you're going to be willing to do the right thing no matter what. And be a good example for other hunters and for yourself and your family, and that you're ending these animals' lives for the right reasons. And that's kind of for me step one. Like you ought not enter into the culture or the zeitgeist of hunting if you don't have that about you. I'm not saying don't get into hunting, but just make sure that you know why you're doing it and that it's for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really good.
Everything else logically flows from there, and responsibility and ethical nature and the ethical nature of the way you comport yourself and success will follow naturally as a result of you starting it with the right intentions.
That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Like that's really good. I don't think that's a piece of advice we've got before.
It's unique. So, Bill, thank you so much for being on tonight. You know, one thing that I've heard you mention in the past about starting Spartan Forge, was really the goal of taking people's time and making it more effective. And a world where everyone is busy and seems like getting busier and busier, people don't have the same amount of time to be out in the woods. And so we really appreciate everything you're doing. And we also appreciate the time that you took tonight to be on our podcast. I felt like I learned a lot and, you know, just great, great getting to connect with someone who has the same values that we have. And, again, yeah, just thank you for all your wisdom, everything that you're doing in the hunting space, because it's helping Austin and I a lot.
Well, I don't know if I come with a ton of wisdom or not. Maybe it just appears as wisdom. I've learned a lot from my mistakes. I guess maybe that is wisdom in a way, but
that is wisdom.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys. Great questions. I love the show and, I hope we can talk again soon.
Absolutely. Well, guys, go check out Spartan Forge. Thank you guys for listening. And like we always say, don't give up. All it takes is just one.